You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hi, Nikita.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I hope you enjoyed that swig of whatever that was. Let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of the Non-Zero Newsletter, to which everyone should subscribe when they're not busy smashing the like button on YouTube or rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts or the podcast app of your choice. You are Nikita Petrov, also a member of the Non-Zero team, also publisher of the Psychopolitica newsletter, also a Russian, although you left Russia not too long after the invasion of Ukraine, and you are now in Spain. But because you're Russian, one question that often comes up in our conversations is that I ask with some anxiety, has Trump been reminding you more of Putin lately? And I mean, sometimes that's like a serious question with real stakes, like, does Trump seem to be consolidating power in ways reminiscent of the ways Putin did? Or does he seem to be acting the way a veteran authoritarian like Putin acts or whatever? This today's version of the question, though, is do you think Putin would have sent a weird sexually suggestive birthday greeting to a famous, affluent, well-connected pedophile? I'm talking, of course, about this thing that was just released, an actual image of the long reported page that Trump had contributed to Jeffrey Epstein's birthday quite a while ago. But now we can say, I think for sure, this is the real thing, because this comes ultimately, I guess, from the Epstein estate and then via some Democrats in Congress who released it. It's funny, the Wall Street Journal went through a bunch of convolutions, like an exegesis, to further nail down that this, you know, was Trump. Like, he also uses the word enigma in these three letters and so on. But at this point, I think we can dispense with that. I mean, the Journal is very self-conscious because they broke the story however many weeks or even months ago. I don't know. But anyway, now, yeah, it's a real thing. We've seen Trump's artwork and we've seen his literary flourish. How does this seem to you? I don't see Putin doing this, but
no, me neither. It made me think when you asked that question over email. Made me think there's some. I forget what it was. It was some, maybe he's talking at a university or something, and he with a smirk, kind of chastising people. He's like, "All of you sitting here, you're so careless. You're just talking on your phones about whatever is happening in your life." And you can see in his face. Yeah. And he's on, and he's like, you're not supposed to, like, you should be aware that he uses words like соответствующие органы, like the appropriate authorities are listening. Like, people are paying attention. Mm. You should take care of what you say, what you don't say, how you behave, what you write online, and minimize the footprint. So I doubt Putin would decide to leave paper trail of any... that postcard, enigmas never age, seems to... The point of it seems to suggest that young women were used... between Trump and Epstein. But that, so how does that look to you? Like, when I feel more like when I saw the thing, and it maybe it's just because some time has passed, it kind of accepted at face value more readily. But when the Wall Street Journal originally broke the story and just described the thing, and it's like typewritten text, weird, almost parable-like language, this dialogue with a voiceover, and then from Trump's hand is the doodle and his name where there would be pubic hair.
You know, what's funny is this is a sign of what a clean mind I have. I had not noticed that. My wife pointed it out to me. So at least one person in our marriage has a clean mind, which is good. But I had not noticed it until this morning. I swear, that's the kind of guy, you know, I was briefly a Boy Scout, Nikita, for 11 months. And I think it shows.
I think they wrote it in the original story, like the reporter explained this is what they see.
But anyway, I will say, look, I'm looking at it now. And if he really wanted to drive that home, he would continue the contours of the body downward, which he didn't do. So the outline of the body does not envelop his signature, which is the way I would have done it. But, you know, I'm me.
But what I'm saying is, when I read the description, it seemed to me that that's not a... I mean, I was maybe I was also listening to... I was in a conspiratorial frame of mind. But the whole context around this, it's his birthday. So Ghislaine goes to collect greeting cards from people. Mm-hmm. And from Donald Trump, she has this printed thing about how... they share a secret and enigmas never age. And then he signs. It seemed to me in the moment like the kind of thing you tell a guy, like, we need this from you. Like, I'm collecting greeting cards from... It's not something that he decided, oh, Jeffrey has a birthday, I'm going to give him this as a gift.
Well, it was definitely solicited by Ghislaine, but are you suggesting she was exercising some kind of leverage? Like when Ghislaine tells you to do something because Jeffrey's got the videos or something?
Again, like when I
think maybe you spent too much time in Russia, Nikita. I'm starting to think.
Isn't it weird? It is what I'm saying. I'm not arguing for it. Something I thought when I originally read the story. Seeing the thing somehow changed it. I'm like, okay, I can sort of see Trump doing this. But still, like, the origin of the text is weird. Can you imagine, like, is that Trump wrote that? Trump sat down and I'm going to make a dialogue.
See, that's the thing. That's the thing is, I think more than how many times he uses the word enigma or the fact that the signature matches perfectly, this just to me sounds like Trump thinking he's sounding more clever than he is. Because it's actually just kind of a little weird and awkward, right? It's like voiceover. There must be more to life than having everything. And then it's this imagined dialogue between him and Epstein. Donald, yes, there is, but I won't tell you what it is. Jeffrey, nor will I. See, the nor will I, that's perfect. That is classic Trump trying to sound like this is for an elite, you know. Epstein is like, these are high-class people. So you say nor. Nor will I, since I also know what it is. I mean, the thing about it, it's kind of like when he's lately been saying, thank you for your attention to this matter at the end of social media posts. It's like, now there is this theory of Trump where actually everything he says is genius and you just don't understand. You're not the intended audience. He's really, it's his populist base and they're not as well educated as you or something. I think sometimes it's true. But often it's not. And Trump's intelligence, by the people who says he has a lot, is greatly overrated, I think. And anyway, this to me sounds like him thinking he's clever and then enigmas never age. Now, by the way, I had a conversation with Mickey Kaus about this. We agreed on what kind of the secret is. And may every day be another wonderful secret is at the end. Do you have a theory as what the secret is? Mickey and I agreed. We had independently arrived at the same conclusion.
No, go ahead.
The secret is you have to have sex every day. Because it starts out...
I've heard that episode.
There must be more to life than having everything. Yes, there is. And then it's this. And what they had said to each other at some point is, you know... Yeah, look, I've heard men say this, right? I mean, I've been in locker rooms and, you know, it's like, you know, what's the secret of life? And maybe it's half of a joke, but, you know, it's this. I'm sure they had said something like this, you know, money's not enough. You gotta, you know, grab them by the... And so that's my theory. It all makes sense to me.
And do you read the enigmas never age as talking about really young women or teenage girls?
Well, it's funny. I mean, then he's got Jeffrey saying, as a matter of fact, it was clear to me the last time I saw you. So at that point, he's saying, Donald, you look so young for a, you know. That's explicit. As a matter of fact, it was clear to me the last time I saw you. That's what I thought. But it could be that up until that point, yeah, the Enigma's never aging, that in the prior line it's supposed to be.
See, I was, maybe I am still in a conspiratorial frame of mind. I read that as the last time I saw you with a 15-year-old girl. So yeah, we were on the same page.
Could be. I mean, look, you know, stuff I recounted to Mickey having listened to this podcast conversation with an extremely credible woman who was Epstein's kind of trophy girlfriend for a while. She had been a Sports Illustrated swimsuit cover model. Trump and Epstein were into some weird shit. There is now two data points suggesting that there was almost a ritual where Epstein would bring young women up to Trump's office, and he would just start fondling them and see how they reacted. Unless, in one case, apparently, you know, Epstein said, "She's not here to see you," by the testimony of the woman, a different woman. They were into some weird shit. I feel sure of that. And it's interesting to me how hard Trump seems to be working to impress him. Trump worked on this. I mean, it may be terrible, but it takes Trump a while to generate something that's terrible in this way. He did this drawing. And I think part of the reason is that, you know, people are right. Like when Michael Tracy says it wasn't a sex ring, you know, I think, yeah, technically it wasn't any kind of classic sex ring. And part of the appeal, although I think Epstein definitely conveyed to some men that hanging out with him was an easy way to get sex. I think part of the appeal was Epstein was well connected, you know? Trump is like, you hang out with Epstein, you're hanging out with Bill Clinton, blah, blah, blah. He cherished this relationship, I think, until it fell apart because Epstein was putting the moves on the daughter of somebody who complained to Trump about it at Mar-a-Lago.
Mm-hmm.
So one quick thing about Putin. At this point, Trump, I doubt, is thinking, I'm going to have a political career someday. He's
right,
not
sure.
He's not conscious the way. And actually, Putin had his reckless era. I mean, once when he was like a KGB agent, he got it. You know, he knew martial arts, I guess. He got into an actual fight with a couple guys on a subway platform. You're not supposed to do that when you're a KGB agent. You're supposed to keep a low profile unless it's somebody you're supposed to kill, you know. And then still keep a low profile.
So I'm trying to think how to phrase the question. What's interesting to me about the Epstein case is not necessarily the details of what exactly happened. It's the fact that we are not given answers on that, and it's supposed to kind of like go away. Like what I'm getting from the... So I've listened some time ago to a bunch of these conspiratorial angles from Tucker Carlson and that kind of crowd. And yeah. I got a kind of a worldview in which the story, the way they spin it about Epstein, makes sense and fits, right? So there's the Mossad agents, this and that. And at the end, like I know you listened to the Daryl Cooper conversation with him. The thing that struck me the most from that conversation is they've been talking about it for like an hour and a half. And then they start talking about the art that these rich, connected people have in their houses. And it's like weird, pedophilic connotations in paintings and this and that. And then it all comes down to like they've been building a narrative about this particular case. And then it fits into a larger worldview where the world does appear to be ruled by a satanic, pedophilic elite with no allegiance to no nation. And it's this international, you know, warfare kind of thing.
Yeah, so this is the conversation with Daryl Cooper, who on Twitter is known as Martyr Maid, and Tucker Carlson. I don't remember them reaching QAnon levels in terms of some actual global, like, conspiracy or satanic cult. They think the elite, you know, the elite are corrupt, especially America's, you know, globalized elite, you know, cosmopolitan elite. This is a whole Trump MAGA thing, right? Like, this is one of the main things they hate and resent is coastal elites who have more allegiance to other countries or other elites in other countries than they do to the American worker and so on. Cooper was describing, as I recall, the apartment of one of the Podestas. So the Podesta brothers, one of them worked for Clinton, the other became a lobbyist. He was describing some kind of, I took it to be some kind of paintings that were in vogue in some crowds that apparently showed children who had been brutalized or something. I was guessing it was like a liberal's way of saying, like, oh, see, I'm so sensitive to the suffering of children around the world. Maybe they're from war-torn areas, and I'm so concerned about it that I became a highly paid lobbyist or whatever. And yeah, he made a big deal of that. And that's part of their shtick for sure. I mean, look, I personally don't know that those paintings were all that diagnostic of anything. Right. But I think they were connecting dots I wouldn't have connected. I don't think, again, that they were painting a QAnon type picture, but yeah, no, they viewed elites as, look, there's a lot of corrupt elites out there. And I gotta say, I have become only more cynical about power in the world in the course of my life. And the Epstein thing has, you know, been like an increment of that, mainly when I realized that you actually should at least take seriously the possibility that he was killed in prison. And I started thinking, like, so wait, is there this whole layer of people who are so powerful that they can just say, I want this guy in prison dead? I mean, it's not that simple, of course, but still. And then the Epstein thing broadly, you know, is just creepy and sleazy and gross and consequential. And there were consequential people hanging out with this guy.
Well, that's the thing that I'm brought up to, Carlson and that conversation with Cooper. I've heard that. I've heard other things like that, where on the conspiratorial side, I can get their story, right? They can give me a narrative and a whole picture of the world to go with it. And then on the non-conspiratorial, mainstream, kind of respectable journalist side, I spent some time with ChatGPT in deep research mode, saying, give me the best version of the conspiratorial angle and the best version of the mainstream thing. Mm-hmm. And it gave me both. I asked, what, like, are you buying the conspiratorial thing? So the conclusion from what ChatGPT got me is, the conspiratorial versions remain plausible, but there's not enough evidence to buy into them. The official story doesn't have important, like, we don't have all of the story. There are important holes in the explanation. We are not, we should not expect the full story to be released. And that's very bad, because without a full story from, like, Department of Justice or someplace, you know, the conspiratorial narrative will remain and in maybe even gain in plausibility, because there is nothing to compete with. And that's kind of how I feel. And it's confusing to me. Let me play this clip of Ezra Klein. So it was when I was, like, fed up. I already, like, listened maybe to one too many conspiratorial podcasts, and I decided I need somebody just sane and reasonable, and YouTube suggested Ezra to me. And I couldn't watch the whole thing. I'll show you the clip after which.
Who is Ezra talking to here?
It's his monologue before the interview, and I didn't even listen to the interview. This bit seemed weird, like turned me off. So here's the clip.
If you force me to give you my best guess, given what we know, I think this guy had a lot of very powerful friends. I think this guy was a predator and a pedophile on an extraordinary scale. And I think those sides of his life were mostly separate. I don't think there is a list of boldface names somewhere. The reason I don't think there's a list is there's been a lot of big law firms hunting for cases here. There is a lot of money to be made in suing anyone connected to Epstein. Very, very powerful firms To say nothing of big media organizations, firms and organizations that have the money to hire the best investigators, the best journalists, they're just not finding it. Does that explain everything? No. Does it resolve everything? No. Does a plea deal Epstein got in Florida look weirdly sweet? Yeah, it does. Does Epstein's death seem weird to me? It does. There is a remainder, a remnant. They'll probably never be resolved here. We will never get satisfaction. But I don't find it easy to resolve that remnant in a conspiracy so total that no government, no law firm, no media organization seems able to breach it. But what MAGA wanted out of the Epstein case wasn't just answers. It was the same thing it wanted out of QAnon. A story that collapsed reality down to something that is well-ordered.
And so then the whole episode, I like scrolled through it, is talking about that last bit. MAGA, how conspiratorial worldview, you know, can give you something to believe in, this and that. And to me, this like, did it sound, is death weird? It does look weird. Did the sweet plea deal was the deal was weird? Yeah, it's suspicious, but we'll never know. And just moving on, that to me is very strange. Like, shouldn't you demand more?
No, because if you just move on, you're wasting hours and hours of good podcast content. You can't move on, Ezra. What kind of podcaster are you? I mean, my reaction would be, first of all, I would say it's not a binary choice. Like, on the one hand, there's this, highly organized, unified conspiracy, right? And in fact, even Cooper and Carlson, I think it was Cooper, said, I don't think he was like just working for the Mossad. He was like in this milieu where he had contacts with the U.S. intelligence agency and this, and like, who's he doing business with at any given time? Who knows? So there's this big middle ground where corruption was going on, and I don't imagine him calling people and saying, I've got this video of you, I want this. On the other hand, you know, this woman I told you about, she said, who was kind of his, he treated well. I didn't even think sex was a huge part of the relationship. She was this trophy girlfriend for a while, and she said, he said to her one point, you know, I've got video of you undressing in the bedroom. So, well, once you know that, you might be careful. You might not really speak out about this guy until he's dead, which is what happened, right? And so, and you know, once you know that kind of thing, or even, or just know that Epstein knows about this whole part of your life that's been conducted in his orbit, if he asks you for a favor, you're going to be more inclined to say yes. I think
sure.
It was probably more that kind of influence. He may have been working multiple angles, but there's definitely just a lot of weird shit here. And, you know, and by the way, you know,
if there are these cameras, what's the answer to where are the tapes? Are there no tapes? Because there was
I don't know. I mean, the other data point on that front is one of the women, I believe it was Maria Farmer, who, if she's the farmer, there's two farmer sisters. One of them I heard a conversation with a long time ago. She seemed very credible, very credible. I think, according to Mickey, she's the one who said, I saw, like, the room where the control panel was, right? Through these cameras. I think that's what Mickey said. You can go back and check my conversation. So, I mean, those are the, you've heard the two data points I'm aware of on the video, but together they're not nothing. I heard both of these women, only one of them said the thing I recited, but they seem credible. Anyway, I'm sorry. I lost track of you. What's the question about the video?
I was under the impression that for a long time, it was, kind of the official line that there are cameras throughout the house and in the bedrooms. And then are there tapes? I mean, Ghislaine is in jail procuring these girls for just Epstein or somebody else? If it's somebody else, who are the people? Like, why is this conversation not... I mean, I would imagine if you're you know, the head of the Justice Department or somebody. There should be a government official who's like really investigating this and then giving a press conference and giving answers to questions. And I'm not hearing any answers to these questions.
Well, yeah, but like, you know, probably every president since Epstein started being Epstein has had a reason not to want this out there. God knows Bill Clinton did. You know, and the rest of them, I mean, Obama and Bush, so far as I know, weren't involved, or Biden, but they all, you know, they all knew some of these people who would be involved. I mean, who knows? I'm not shocked that no Justice Department has really taken this on in a big way. And it flew under the radar screen for quite a while. But you know, another thing I'd say about, I don't know when Ezra taped that, but, you know, as for like big names, he's saying, well, if there were big names, some lawyer would have latched onto him or something. I mean, first of all, we don't have all the documents and we have no idea how many documents we don't have. We have no idea if there are tapes that are in somebody's possession that we don't have. I don't, but the other thing is, you know, since he taped that, my attention has been called by Mickey Kouse on Kouse Files to this, what one thing Ghislaine said when questioned by Trump administration officials, shortly before she was sent to a country club prison, which is she basically said Larry Summers and Bill Clinton went into rooms and got massages, and she can't say for sure whether there was sex, but hey, mm-hmm. those are big names. Larry Summers was president of Harvard and Treasury Secretary. Bill Clinton is Bill Clinton. And she, you know, it wasn't like she was answering that factual question, did these two guys get massages? But she just used them as an example. She said, look, when Bill Clinton goes in and gets a massage, Larry Summers goes, I don't know what's going on. So, come on. I mean, you know, a gentleman doesn't get a massage, okay? Like in Jeffrey Epstein's mansion, you know? I mean, I'm sorry, but like these guys knew what was going on.
So like with this, you just said, you know, there is reason for every presidential administration to not want this out. Is that, and that's a bunch of presidential administration, does that leading into like the next election, are there a lot of people who are not going to vote because they think the two sides of the political game are this, like the same people who hang out with pedophiles and maybe are pedophiles themselves?
No, I don't see it as that unified. I just mean like, look, every president knows, for example, Ehud Barak, former prime minister of Israel, who seems to be implicated. They probably met Prince Andrew. What's his name? Is it Alberto Gonzalez? I think he served in both the Trump and the Bush administrations, and he was involved in Epstein getting he was a prosecutor who allowed Epstein to get a light sentence the first time around, like 20 years ago or whatever. So they all, you know, they all know people who don't want stuff, mm-hmm. who don't want more to come out. And I don't know how many people they know, but that's all I meant. I do not think every single like elite is, I don't think it's all that unified, the corruption, I guess.
Mm-hmm. but do you think the story changes the way Americans think about power? Is it going to be harder to get excited about a presidential nominee from the one party or the other because of this?
Something just occurred to me. Like, here's a way to look at this. Every great athlete or great rocks or whatever, just about everyone, they have people out there who want to enter their world. And if they can do it with drugs, if they can give them free cocaine, that's a way to enter their world. If they can line them up with women, that's a way to enter their world. There was this line from, I forget who said, but with respect to Jack Kennedy and Frank Sinatra and Peter Lawford, who's Kennedy's brother-in-law and an actor. The guy said, Peter pimped for Frank and Frank pimped for Jack, okay? Because if you're John Kennedy, and for that matter, Frank Sinatra, you might like a lot of sex. I think in those two cases, we can say that with confidence. You'd rather, you know, it's like what Steve Pinker said once about prostitutes, you know, when they say, well, why does somebody like Charlie Sheen, who could have all kinds of women, have sex with a prostitute? He said he's not paying for the sex. He's paying for her to go away afterwards. These guys do not want personal entanglement. They don't want to have to do the courtship. They don't even want to have to just, you know, do some really crass flirtation, ideally. They just want to show up and have it be there. And that's what Frank did for Jack. That's what Peter did for Frank. And all celebrities the world around have people who would be happy to do that for them. Okay? So, or drugs or whatever their weakness is. And that's a way to just flip this and look at it from the other side and think, well, of course this kind of thing happens. This is just weird because what's intriguing about this is a single guy who wanted to enter these worlds entered a whole lot of them. And there's evidence that, yeah, maybe he, if you look at where his money came from, obviously people have mentioned Israel because a lot of the money came from pro-Israel, ardently pro-Israel people. So that's one possibility. But in any event, this is just on an unusual scale, and there's an unusual kind of amount of coherence to it. And yet, it isn't just some kind of methodically thought out plot, because it begins with Epstein's own perversity. It really does. I mean, he had a bizarrely active libido with, and a particular kind of attraction to particular kinds of people. And I think without that, he doesn't become Jeffrey Epstein. So it's a weird case. I don't know.
I feel like I've been.
I mean, look, I'm sure Putin does have ways. I mean, it's an interesting question. For all I know, Putin is a buttoned up guy. He considers himself a Christian. I think he's obviously had mistresses, but that's different from entering this world where it's just like instant gratification, which he could have if he wanted it. I don't know. Do you have a theory about Putin?
Well, we don't know about the instant gratification. Like, there are stories, there's been investigative reporting on the mistresses and the, like, non-official wives, you could say, like, children from other women, and the women then got riches and whatnot, like, elevated, their status was elevated. So there, I haven't heard anything in the area of like wild sex parties or women coming in and out. There were specific stories about specific women.
Mm, yeah, right. And one of them, I mean, he had a murder fight or something.
We wouldn't know. Yeah. I mean, how would we find out about a one night
affair? It's not a super transparent regime.
Yeah. So this, it doesn't resonate with you what I'm like, what I'm trying to point to, the like, so you said a bunch of presidential administrations had reasons to not want this out. The current doesn't want this out. There's going to be an election. I'm assuming this either is not a story by then, or if it's brought up, the next president is also not going to release anything that hasn't been released before. So it's just going to stay in the status that it is. And does that not, you know, diminish whatever remnants of faith in the political system that you have? It's just like shit like that is going to happen sometimes and you're not going to get answers and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, look, my faith has been diminished by so many things lately. And it's interesting, I guess, for Trump, this is a particular kind of challenge, in part because, like a lot of populace, or like some, you know, he rose to power partly by saying the whole system is corrupt. Mm-hmm. I alone can save us. And so now you know, and these people like the Tuckers and the Daryl Coopers had this this kind of idea about this corrupt world and what these, you know, and now Trump himself seems connected to the corrupt world they already considered the enemy. Like, that's a problem, I guess.
That's what Ezra was talking about in that video.
Yeah.
What happens if the person who's supposed to expose the corrupt elite turns out to be the corrupt elite? What does that make to your worldview that was so like attached to him?
I mean, it's weird because on the other hand, part of Trump's brand is, I'm an animal. I'm like a classic like male who does locker room talk and I'm not going to lie to you about. I mean, I'm going to kind of go through the motions of lying about a porn star a little, but everybody knows he's out there. And that's as part of my appeal is I don't sanitize my discussion and pretend to be something I'm not. So he's always, you know, he's always had that. But with this, he's, you know, just shoulder to shoulder with Bill Clinton. I don't think he wants that.
Okay.
What's that? Were you hoping I would be more? I'm pretty suspicious and conspiracy minded. I just I think people tend to overestimate how centralized conspiracies are.
I'm not even, it's not exactly the conspiratorial part. Like, say there's no conspiracy, it's just like you're saying, he's connected and he provides this opportunity. If you want to have sex with the girl, she's there, and there's no blackmail and there's no Mossad and none of that, but just the fact that all of the people in his orbit are not being endlessly questioned about it. There is no new information from the White House. They say, you know, there's nothing else to release. And it's just a lack of that official kind of narrative, official story. If there was a big press conference where Kash Patel gave compelling answers to everything, you know, told what they have, what they don't have, and presented a narrative that it was like, okay, I see how that's the reality. But what I see instead is no new information, Democrat hoax, moving on.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. I mean, I remember Mickey and I used to on the podcast, I think during the Biden administration, go, you know, can you believe, like, why isn't anybody telling us? Are there tapes? Where are the tapes? It's like, right. But after a while, you know, you just get numb to all the cause for cynicism. And of course, Trump has brought in a whole new level of that. I mean, you know, the country is in serious trouble. And, you know, Trump has, you know, I mean, he just seems to have, there just seem to be no limits on his desire to corrupt the republic. And you know, that's my current view, just kind of looking at the trajectory he's on. I mean, it's hard to say because he's so motivated by wanting to make headlines. And so the more we fear this, the bigger the headlines get when he sends troops into a city, but that's positive reinforcement for him. So he sends them into another city. He's like, you know, but which is brings us back to the question. Do you look at Trump and think, yeah, of course the story's not nearly the same. You know, as we said last time, Putin didn't inherit, you know, more than two centuries worth of a republic with institutions and norms, but it was a much more democratic and liberal place than it is now, and he shut that down over time. And, you know, he now has certain kinds of controls over media and so on. I'm wondering, as you watch Trump in this first 8 months, how much does this remind you of Russia?
So you brought up the National Guard. That is one. I'm thinking about this. In thinking about this, I am kind of thinking I should be asking you questions about what exactly is happening in the U.S. because I don't quite get. So with the National Guard, there is a parallel, you can say, where, when was it? I'm not totally sure, maybe like 20, 2014 or something. I should look up the date. But there was like a reform that consolidated various, there was a bunch of different units within the, you know, different kinds of police, basically, that were consolidated into this new formation called Rosguardia, which is like National Guard, Guardia Guard, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is, has, you know, the one person on top who responds directly to the president, while the previously all of these different four different units had their own chain of command, their own bureaucracy, right? So this is consolidating power within the executive branch, specifically the president. There's no like layers of bureaucracy between him and this guard. And that became the force to take control of the streets. If there's a protest, these people are going to be there, and there are a lot of them. So mm-hmm. that's an important element of, you know, gaining control, consolidating and staying in power. When I see news about the National Guard in the US, I can't quite tell how much is even happening. Like how, there's no reform of the thing, right? There's no like new structures being created or new rules for what the National Guard can or cannot do. It's just the norms that, well, no, there was this case. Isn't there a court case, a court decision about LA where they ruled that this was not, this was against the law deploying the National Guard there?
I think Trump lost a round and then won on appeal at last check, or maybe even by the from the Supreme Court. I think, but this week I think he got a ruling in his favor on LA. But I mean, people should fact check me. But
this is another one of these examples where nobody's actually sure what's allowed, what's not allowed.
Well, no, it's actually, you're right. It is normative because it's actually, unfortunately, pretty clear that the president can the National Guards are normally under the control of governors. But the president can nationalize them in the event of emergency. And the big problem is that they let the president declare the emergency. Now, you can see how this made sense a couple hundred years ago, when it took a week to get a message from DC to Maine, so that if Congress wasn't in session and you wanted them to affirm that there was an emergency, it would take forever. I can see that, but it's ridiculous now that you let one man say, we have an emergency, National Guard's totally under my control, and various other things he can do. We have seen a number of things where he has invoked an emergency, sometimes of dubious legality. But the fact is, he has a lot of leeway, more than he should have. So in this case, it's not like he has to do what Putin did, it sounds like, at least to have command of these troops. You know, he gets command of them if he says there's an emergency, as I understand it. But I mean, what alarms me as much is that right away in his administration, he started replacing top generals, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the top legal officers in each branch of service, the people who decide what the military can legally do and can't.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Pete Hegseth is just a total tool, you know, and in general, just the number of loyalists in the administration, it is night and day compared to his first term, where he just didn't know what he was doing. He was just surprised to be in the White House.
Talking about emergency powers, did you see that exchange with Zelensky where he said, Trump said to Zelensky, so you're saying if there's a war, you don't have to have elections, right? That's good to know.
I mean, he does have a little bit of a sense of humor, but I mean, look, if there's any way he can get a third term, I now feel he will take it, and I don't think he gives a shit whether it's in any sense constitutional if he can get away with it. And
do you think he can get away with it?
It could play out a lot of ways. I mean, on the one hand, if he gets much more egregious in his power grabbing and the economy heads south and weakens him, then I can imagine a scenario where three or four Republican senators get together and say, you know, we should stop this. And that would be important because that would mean he can't get any more federal judges through. He can't get any more legislation through. You know, I mean, if they really said, look, this is, I mean, look, I the idea of finding four politicians in contemporary America who would stand on principle, I admit it sounds kind of comical. I mean, honestly, but it's not, you know, I look at some of these people and I can kind of imagine it happening. So that could happen. And that, you know, that could stop some of the momentum that might otherwise lead to bad, you know, because look, if he's going to do some horrible power grab, I'm sure there's a lots of times when he'd like to have authorizing legislation, you know? So if suddenly there's a block that keep him from passing anything in the Senate, he's in more trouble. But you know, unfortunately, I don't imagine him being stopped through, you know, some kind of revolution or whatever. I mean, because for one thing, you know, his supporters have the guns. I mean, if it came to that, you know, the people who vote for Biden and Obama don't buy guns, you know, by and large. I mean, and
right. I would guess so, whose side the army is on and the National Guard and the police are on. It's important.
It is important, and I don't know. Look, there's that whole dimension, the whole current thing with like Chicago, that whole face off. And I don't know. I mean, I do think it's safe to say that. In a lot of police forces and in the ranks of the military, there's a lot of people who are MAGA sympathetic. That's just demographically bound to be the case. Beyond that, I don't know how things would play out. And, you know, we're getting pretty far ahead of the game because, you know, I like to think that the Supreme Court, if it really mattered, would step in. Although so far they seem to be giving him a lot of leeway. The good news is he has not flagrantly defied a clear Supreme Court order.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm ambivalent about the tariffs because he's on weak ground legally, I think. So the Supreme Court could well say, no, none of these tariffs are actually in effect. But in a way, that would be a godsend because if the economy's headed south, he'd like to be able to say, man, if they had just stuck with my tariffs, you know, whereas if the tariffs stay in place and the economy heads south, then I think he's more weakened politically. And this matters, you know, what his political strength is if push comes to shove.
Now you're concerned about I'm sure not just Trump, but like how do you distribute your concern between Trump specifically and the structures behind him, the loyalists that he has in power? Like if he steps away, he doesn't try to take this third term, but there is a person that succeeds him that is agreed will continue the same policies. Mm-hmm. Are you less freaked out about that circumstance? Or if there's like another 8 years in the same direction headed by a different person, or is that even scarier? Because then you have, you know, these four plus eight more to actually make structural changes and reforms like the one I was talking, like, you know, make the National Guard much bigger and make it report directly to the president. And then you know, and things like that, like gradually change the system to be more authoritarian.
I mean, it depends on who the successor is. I haven't seen much signs that J.D. Vance has much in the way of principles personally. People have differing views of him. He seems pretty crassly opportunistic to me and perfectly willing to appeal to the basest parts of human nature, which is something Trump has, you know, kind of tangentially a little. But we had an item about this in the Non-Zero newsletter. I was really disappointed in David Sacks. You know, I've had him on the podcast. We had some overlap in our views on Ukraine, but when you know, Trump did this thing where, you know, classically thuggish Trump thing where he says about the CEO of Intel, you know, started out with Tom Cotton, completely unreliable narrator and stuff like this, saying, oh, my God, this guy had invested in Chinese companies. He's got to go. He can't be CEO of Intel. And, you know, this guy is like, I think maybe he's from Singapore, but probably ethnically Chinese. I'm not sure. But so it's classic xenophobic Tom Cotton shit. And Trump jumps in on social media and says, yeah, he's got to go. He absolutely has to. You know, he capitalizes one of the words to make sure you understand. And then, you know, the guy, the Intel CEO comes into the office. By the time he leaves, Trump, the deal is, no, he can remain CEO of Intel, but Intel is giving 10% ownership of its company to the U.S. government. And nominally in exchange for the money it was supposed to get under the CHIPS Act without surrendering the equity to the government, okay? And on the All In podcast, the host, Jason Calacanis, says, look, it's, you know, not a sin for the U.S. to have equity in a company, but, you know, the way he did it, you know, intimidating this guy and, you know, threatening to blah, blah, blah. You know, and Sachs says, well, you gotta break some eggs to make an omelet. And then, and they press him on and he says, well, if he had, you know, if he had done it like the other way, it might not have worked. It's like American people want results. I mean, that just creeped me out. And I was so disappointed because Sachs, I mean, first of all, he's a lot smarter than a lot of people in this administration, which granted, not a super high bar, but he's a very smart guy. I had never thought of him as unprincipled, but, you know, this, it's just, you know, there aren't many people who can resist the lure of power. And I understand why he can't diss Trump. He has, you know, he has his job. I mean, if people don't know, he's the AI czar and the crypto czar. And so he can't go around criticizing Trump. I get that. But he could have dodged. He didn't have to say this. It's just creepy as shit. You gotta break some eggs to make an omelet. That's disgusting. That's fucking disgusting.
Do you think, I mentioned in the last conversation when we were talking about this, comparing Trump to Putin, we discussed like different vectors. I mentioned Putin's taking away the direct elections of governors, which were later brought back with a different system where the there are like filters for the candidates. So now governors are elected, but to get on the ballot, you need to go through, there's a system for the government to screen the people. So on the governor side of things, is there a consolidation of power that's possible in the US where, you know, if you continue just through politics, lawfare, some other methods, if Trump does this term, if there's like another 4 years of a different guy putting more effort into it, can there be a new reality where you can't become a governor unless you have the support of the executive branch?
I think, you know, we had talked a little about this thing that Putin did to move power from governors to him. I think it's much harder for Trump to do something like that, just generically, because in America, there is this... Mm-hmm. There's just this long tradition of a relative degree of autonomy on the part of the states. I mean, the Constitution says, you know, they have to, I'm not a legal expert, but by and it, what the Constitution tends to say is, you know, they got to have these offices. They got to, I mean, it even leaves it to them how they choose the electors in the Electoral College who will vote for president. So I think it would be hard. Well, it would be hard for Trump to formally move power from the governors
right
to him. But
right. So my question, again, are there informal ways of doing that?
Well, I mean, look, nationalizing the National Guard is a start. Like, you know, because one of the great dangers is he keeps pushing the envelope on that. And then some sort of violence breaks out in response. And then he declares a whole nother kind of emergency. And at some point, it's just like, who's going to stop him? Regardless of what it says on paper, it's like, you know, if you're the National Guard and you're thrown into some situation and suddenly three of your comrades get killed, and Trump says, you now have authority to crack down, and now you feel like personally threatened. I mean, you're not going to rebel, probably, right? Like, who is they've got the guns. And what, are the cops going to, I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know. It just is scary how much terra incognita we could be headed into. We're already in. I mean, in my lifetime, there's no precedent for this. And that's why all of these people, you know, like David Sacks, I guess it would be too much to ask that he looks at where Trump is headed and like resigns on principle, but shit, giving him the kind of rhetorical support he's giving him for obviously creepy, scary, thuggish, authoritarian shit is just very disappointing. I'm sure he'll be sorry to hear that I said that.
How worried are you? So I've heard from more than one Canadian that they're actually taking it seriously that America is going to try to annex Canada. And I've heard from at least one Mexican that they're worried about American troops in Mexico. These kinds of scenarios, do you see as realistic?
Annexing Canada, no. What's the Mexican scenario? I mean, things can get weird with Mexico because he could start bombing drug cartels.
Right. And once you start bombing drug cartels, you might start, you know, deploying troops as
well.
And
they started, right? I mean, they've set the precedent. They bombed a boat that, you know, they may be right. We'll never know, will we? Not that it would be legal to do it, even if they did have drugs. We have the capacity to just stop them, you know, and board the boat. But,
I mean, part of the reason I'm asking is, so I mentioned the quote from the conversation with Zelensky, and generally we're talking about, you mentioned emergency, you know, powers. War is something that changes rules immediately. Like, Russia has been sliding towards a more restrictive system for a long time. But when the full-blown war with Ukraine was announced, you saw like that day, we live in a different country. And the next couple of days, new laws are passed, you know, discreditation of the army, spreading fake information about the army. So now, at the time, I think you could have said Russia invaded Ukraine and go to jail for that, because the official narrative is there's a limited military operation. It's not a war. Like, if you call that a war, you could get into real trouble. I don't know if they're doing much of that now, but the law is still there. They can. And so do you imagine that level of game changers in the next, I don't know, 10 years that just shift the game completely? Like, we're not talking anymore about whether the governor can stand up to the presence, because this is not the time. We're at war with the invading forces of drug traffickers and criminals and rapists from down south.
Yeah, I mean, look, war does completely transform the psychology of a nation. And I think it's in war, especially, that you realize how much of the restraints were normative and not legal. It's like, you look back and it's like, in World War II, we really rounded up everyone, every Japanese American, and locked them up. And like, sometimes people say, well, it wasn't quite a prison. Well, I don't know. There were walls, right? Like, they couldn't leave. You know, it seems amazing. Then again, it seems amazing that, you know, you drop atomic bombs on cities and there's almost zero dissent. I mean, the U.S. did lie. The government did lie and claim that Hiroshima had been a military target. But still, I'm just trying to imagine, like, what is the most likely kind of war that, I mean, he, you know, he did just change the name of the Department of Defense to the Department of War. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, he thinks this is all a joke, but then he says, and Chicago's going to find out what I mean.
I saw that. Yeah.
What, you know, what, yeah, great, great. In terms of what war, I mean, there is all this China phobia, you know, almost every elite in America seems determined to gin up fear about China, Democrat, Republican, I mean, in fact, I don't think Trump is above average in that regard. I just bring that up because it's not like there are, it's like, we're not going to go to war with Canada. We're not going to go to war with Mexico. There's no way we can feel threatened militarily by Mexico. So I guess the good news is it's not that easy to imagine a war that would be genuinely scary enough, unless, you know, China or something, that it would take all the brakes off of, you know, ordinary restraints by itself.
I mean, as we say in Russia, special military operation against the cartels in Mexico. So you're not at war with Mexico. You're just really concerned about the drugs coming into the United States, and the Mexican government is not taking care of that. And so the American troops are going into Mexico to take control of the situation.
Yeah. He may do that. I just don't see Americans, you know, the optimal for an aspiring authoritarian president is citizens feeling genuinely threatened by a war. And I don't know how much of that Putin got. You tell me. I mean, Ukraine was at least, it was right on the border. And there were these, you know, kind of ethnically Russian or whatever you want to call them, parts of Ukraine. And some Russians at least felt that Ukraine had already assaulted what they considered fellow Russians, right? So I don't, and I mean, you know, Putin could say, look, there's these NATO advisors, they're sending Ukraine weapons. You tell me, do you have any sense for how widespread the sense of actual possible threat from the conflict with Ukraine was in Russia?
Like, if Russia didn't invade, would have Russia been invaded?
Well, or at least once the invasion happened, it's like, yeah, we got to win this thing or we could be in trouble, you know?
From my memory, early on, the sense was a lot of people thought that Ukraine doesn't stand a chance and it's going to be quick. And if you remember the first weeks, I mean, Russian army was on the outskirts of Kyiv. And mm-hmm. at that time, the sense was hopefully this is going to blow over pretty quickly and it's going to be like, and I think that was the plan. That was the idea. I think they were hoping for something like
Crimea.
Georgia in 2008. Mm-hmm. So I think it's, once the war started, we got to win it is the prevalent feeling, because what happens if you lose? But it's not, I don't think people felt, I mean, the more war goes on, the more people understand how, it was supposed to be over very, a long time ago, and it's not mm-hmm. still, and people keep dying on both sides. So I don't know. I don't think there was the fear of a threat from that side was what mattered. It's that now the war is happening. So whatever you thought, feared before doesn't matter. Now this is the new reality.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess the good news is Trump's approval ratings aren't great. On the other hand, there seems to be a fairly high floor on the disapproval. More people disapprove than approve, but I don't know. I don't want to overdramatize it. I think there's a pretty good chance we could get through this. I do. I think I I don't You know, I think probably, I mean, the good thing about the Supreme Court ruling so often in his favor is that they're kind of, you can see it as storing up political capital on their part. So that if they do, you know, he's not getting to paint them as tools of the woke elite or something, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. So should we, we've been talking more than an hour, should we go behind our paywall and talk about the truly salacious things happening in the world?
What are we going to talk about? We want to talk about South Park?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk about South Park. Not just the Trump stuff. People should check out South Park this season. Not just the Trump stuff, but episode 3 is this brilliant, I thought, commentary on Silicon Valley and AI that puts them together in a way that I haven't seen. It's like a unified kind of critique that I hadn't seen before. And that's all I'll say. And they're just going to have to pay for the rest, Nikita. You can, if you're a paid subscriber to the Non-Zero Newsletter, easy to become one. You get to hear this. But if you'd rather go to your grave without ever having heard it, fine. But you had the chance.
Yeah, so let's do that. And maybe I'll run some Russian stuff by you and ask whether there's anything similar in the U.S., kind of reverse of continuing the theme of parallels between Russia and the U.S., but from the opposite perspective. I'll give you Russian Absolutely. Stuff and you'll tell me whether something similar has happened or can be imagined in the U.S.
Yeah, I feel I've already kind of dominated the conversation, but that's because you kept asking questions. And if there's a way to reverse that, I will. But if forced to continue to pontificate, I'm willing to accept that burden, I guess. Okay, so show notes have a link to, I guess, Non-Zero, to a way to become a paid subscriber. In any event, thanks everybody who's followed us this far. And anything else before we descend it over? Oh, check out Nikita's Psychopolitica. By the time this appears, there will already have been a live stream with Boris, right? But that'll be on your... People can probably find a recorded version of that, right?
If I get my shit together, because I haven't been posting recordings in the last few. But eventually, yeah, I'm doing regular live streams with Boris, who's been on Non-Zero. We've done a couple of these live streams at Non-Zero. We're now doing them at Psychopolitica. And they happen every couple of weeks. And eventually I'll get to a place where there's actual schedule and the release of the recordings. For now, you gotta show up live.
But in any event, check out Psychopolitica, Nikita's newsletter, which is spelled with a C, not a K.